I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Jay Sanderson, the Maverick President and CEO of the Los Angeles Jewish Federation. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. In most parts of the country, these are the dog days of summer, the last hot, humid weeks prior to Labor Day and the beginning of school and full work schedules and the return to normal life as we know it. Here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, it's a little different, as it always is here. We started back to school and full work in early to mid-August, but whenever summer is officially over for you, there remains a kind of rhythm to life that reflects the seasons to a degree, but is also a kind of humanly imposed way to create balance and proportion in our lives. Our way of structuring the year provides benchmarks that accentuates some periods and smooths others over. Joni Mitchell sang about this 45 years ago. The seasons, they go round and round. But this has been true since Ecclesiastes wrote in the Bible 2,300 years ago, for everything there's a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. Whether we are closely tied to the actual natural world's seasons or not, we need markers for our lives. And ever since human beings began clustering together in community, and we have been doing that since we evolved from earlier primates, and probably did it then, we have chosen to observe certain festivals that help us structure and understand our lives. Whichever holidays you choose to celebrate, whatever your religious or civil tradition, whether it is Rosh Hashanah, Hanukkah, and Passover that frame your year, or Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter, or Ramadan, Eid al-Fitr, and Eid al-Adha, or even Halloween, New Year's, and Super Bowl Sunday, collective events give a certain proportion and balance to the cycle of life. We remember where we were when we celebrated them, and it adds proportion and meaning to our lives. Judaism has always understood this need for seasonal benchmarks, for periodic events that give structure to our annual cycle. Hanukkah brings light to the shortest days of the year in December. Purim celebrates the end of winter. Passover is the great springtime festival of freedom, and Shavuot heralds the arrival of summer. But it is in autumn that the Jewish calendar really goes all out. Starting with a build-up to the end of the year in early fall, with the month of Elul and the Slichot services, we enter into a period so rich with holidays that it seems as though there simply isn't a normal week from Rosh Hashanah until the end of Simchat Torah. And there isn't. It is this period of the year that we mean when we Jews talk about the holiday season. The Jewish New Year celebrations are followed 10 days later by Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, which is followed just 4 days later by Sukkot, the Thanksgiving Festival of Booths, which runs for a full 8 days and concludes with Simchat Torah, the celebration of Torah. This year, from September 16th through October 9th, we are essentially always either celebrating a festival or preparing for the next one, or both. What this means is that in this season, it becomes particularly important and pretty intense to be Jewish, whether you do the holidays fully or even partially. And if you happen to do it professionally, you know, like a rabbi or a cantor or both, well, holy cow, it's a spiritual and emotional workout that can set you up for a truly powerful and beautiful year. There are now just 3 weeks to go until Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and beginning of this holiest season for us. Last Sunday, we began the final month of the Jewish calendar year, Elul, a month in which we try to find our way closer to God, in which we begin the process of tshuva, return. The four letters of the Hebrew name for this month, Aleph, Lamed, Vav, Lamed, Elul, are traditionally interpreted to stand for the four words of a famous phrase from the book The Song of Songs in the Bible. Ani ledodi vedodi li, I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. In these last days of the year, we seek the lover's closeness with the Holy One who created us and who knows our true nature. It is the beginning of an exalted time of year, a period of introspection and self-awareness, a time to come back to our Jewish identity and to the best within us. Particularly at this season, we seek tshuva, return or repentance, coming back to God and to the best of us. Or as some might put it, only 20 more tshuva shopping days until Rosh Hashanah. And so, following the tradition of blowing the shofar, the ram's horn, every day this month of Elul, here's the traditional shofar sequence blown each morning of this month. Well, you should be awake by now. The shofar is designed to awaken us to tshuva, to return to God and to those we love in repentance and humility. May it work that way for you today and all through this period of Elul. Continuing our High Holy Day musical preview and to play us in on this morning in a more elaborate musical way, here is Jan Pierce singing the classic High Holy Day prayer, Avinu Malkeinu, with Max Janowski's famous setting.
Avinu Malkeinu, Shema Koleinu. Avinu Malkeinu, Chatanu Lefanecho. Avinu Malkeinu, Chamol Oleinu.
That was cantor and operatic tenor Jan Pierce singing the classic prayer of the High Holy Day season, Avinu Malkeinu. Rosh Hashanah is now just 3 weeks away. Get your tickets. Our guest this morning was a successful Jewish media entrepreneur, founder of the Jewish Television Network, and producer of the famed PBS show The Jewish Americans, Career Change, that has landed him in one of the least entrepreneurial organizations in the Jewish world, the Jewish Federation of Los Angeles. Find out from Jay Sanderson why he made this leap and what he has found when we come back on Too Jewish.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. I love the fact that when people come into Mama's, they feel right at home. For example, a lot of times they'll walk up to the counter and give a shout out to my nephew Vinny. Or they'll see Liz and ask her about the kids. The truth is, people feel at home at our restaurants because that's how we feel about our restaurants. But Tucson's a big town, and there's still a bunch of people who haven't experienced Mama's friendly atmosphere yet. They don't know that the Spina family opened the first Mama's back in 1980. Or that our pizzas are made from the freshest ingredients, or that our sauce goes all the way out to the edge. Or that we have an absolutely huge pizza called the Mama's Family Size Pizza. So whether you're a Mama's regular or a newbie, we invite you to come on home to Mama's Family Style Pizza, Calzones, and Hero Sandwiches. We've got four convenient locations that you can find on the web at mamasfamous.com. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We're delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, Jay Sanderson. He's the president and CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater Los Angeles, my native city. He's been professionally active in the Jewish world for over 25 years, has had an extensive experience as a Jewish entrepreneur, as CEO and executive producer of the Jewish Television Network, where he created, produced, and wrote something like 700 hours of television programming. He is also the producer of the famous show on PBS, The Jewish Americans. Welcome. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning.
All right, so I'm going to ask a difficult question. What's a nice Jewish entrepreneur like you doing in a bureaucratic institution like the Jewish Federation?
Well, a little over three years ago, I had an epiphany, and that is at a certain point in your life when you start thinking about, you know, the impact you've made and could make. You know, for 22 years I produced Jewish programming, television programming, and internet programming, and got engaged people in Jewish life. But then what? You know, the then what is, you know, what happened with those people afterwards? And given the huge challenges we have today in terms of losing Jewish community, I felt like if I could play a role in building and sustaining the Jewish community for the next generations, I should do it. And at the time I was having this epiphany, the job of being the president and CEO of the Jewish Federation opened up. So I felt like it was Besharet, that, you know, if they were on some level crazy enough to select me, then I should be crazy enough to do the job.
What do you bring to this position that maybe has not been the hallmark of Federation life till now?
I'm not interviewing you for the job, by the way.
Just no, you know what? Look, I think that... I think my life experience and my view of what it means to build Jewish community is different than many of my colleagues. And because I haven't grown up professionally in the Jewish community, nor have I been involved in the Jewish Federation, I think I bring a fresh outlook and maybe more of an open mind to what needs to happen. The truth of the matter is, I believe that the Federation model, which has been so successful for such a long time, needs to be transformed, that the community's changed dramatically, and that donors' interests have changed dramatically, and that the Federation needs to evolve along with those changes. And I think that I, because of my very varied background, because I have a communications and marketing background, because I'm coming from the outside, I think I can see things in a different way than others can see them.
We will get more specific, go from the clull to the prut, from the larger picture to the specific with Jay Sanderson when we come back, CEO and President of the Jewish Federation of Greater Los Angeles, when we return on To Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. And here is our weekly 2012 presidential election campaign Jewish moment. As the National Political Party conventions approach, Democrats in Charlotte and the GOP in Tampa, the Republican Party's platform will include support for a two-state solution in the Middle East. Their platform committee meeting in Tampa last week rejected several amendments which would have removed language supportive of a two-state solution. A vote before the full Republican convention in Tampa is expected next week. The proposed language, as it now stands, written by the Romney campaign, says, "We envision two democratic states, presumably Israel and Palestine." Also, at the Republican convention this year, for the first time, there's a Mormon-Jewish get-together co-sponsored by the American Jewish Committee and the Tampa Jewish Federation, a nod to the interest of the faith of the presumptive Republican nominee, Mitt Romney. This is not something we were doing 20 years ago, Jason Isaacson, the AJC Director of Government and International Affairs, said, but obviously it's a community America is being introduced to in new ways in the course of this election campaign. And finally, at the Democratic Party Convention, which will re-nominate President Barack Obama, the National Jewish Democratic Council will maintain an RV parked outside the convention center where delegates can schmooze with one of the 38 Jewish House or Senate members. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who chairs the Democratic National Committee, will be featured prominently. Since there is only one national Republican lawmaker, Congressman Eric Cantor, a past guest of Too Jewish, the Republicans will have a Jewish folding chair outside the convention center in Tampa. Just kidding. That was our campaign 2012 Jewish election moment. We welcome our maven on Israel and the Middle East, Guy Gelbert, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy. Good morning.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Israel has a capital. The capital is Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the Jewish people. And yet, internationally, Jerusalem is not recognized as the capital, but Tel Aviv. Let's talk about that political conundrum.
You know, the funny thing is that internationally, Tel Aviv is obviously not recognized as the capital because Israel don't recognize Tel Aviv as a capital. Israel defines Jerusalem as its capital, and everybody knows that it's a country's right to define what city is its capital. You know, you can't force a capital on another country, especially not on a democratic country. In a sense, not recognizing Jerusalem as the capital is coming and saying that you don't recognize the right of Israel
to be a sovereign state, in effect.
Exactly. And you don't recognize the right of the Jewish people over the state of Jerusalem.
Or the city of Jerusalem.
The city of Jerusalem. So there are two layers to it.
I should note that, by the way, it's a little bit like, you know, pretending America's capital was New York City or Philadelphia instead of Washington, D.C.
Isn't it? So I must admit, for me, as an Israeli, that's very offending. but also as a Jew. And there are two layers to it. One thing is, of course, that many countries are afraid or concerned or, you know, you choose the world, the word, from the reaction of the Arab world. The Arab world don't want the recognition of Jerusalem as they don't want the recognition of Israel as a Jewish state. The other layer, which probably less people are aware of, are that many countries, especially in the US and in Europe, are concerned from the reaction of the church and the Catholic Church, especially of the Vatican. As from the Christian perspective, Jerusalem is holy to the Christians, and they're not willing to recognize the fact that the Jews were the one that built Jerusalem and made it a holy state. And historically, it was the center of Jewish life all along history. So on many levels, a lot of countries in Europe and the United States fail to recognize Jerusalem as the capital, also because they're a little bit afraid, I might say, from their reaction in the Christian world and in the main churches.
You know, I don't know that people realize, but Jerusalem, if you haven't been to Israel, realize that Western Jerusalem, where the Knesset is, where all the government offices are, has been under Israeli Jewish control since the days of the settlement. It's long before 1948. It's never been conquered in war by the Jews. It was a Jewish settlement, and we defended it in the War of Independence. So it's a very weird and, I think, unique perspective to say that somehow the new city of Jerusalem, where all of the Israeli government offices actually are, with the exception of defense, is somehow not the capital.
You know, in 1881, if I remember correctly, the Ottoman Empire, a Muslim empire, did a population study, and at that year, before Zionism even started, there was a Jewish majority in Jerusalem.
Right, and that was actually the old city of Jerusalem, what people call East Jerusalem today.
Exactly. Well, you know, there's no East and West Jerusalem. That's a fake. You know, the Western Wall, the holiest site for the Jewish people worldwide,
is in East Jerusalem. Of course.
So, you know, that's not the reality.
Well, and I should note in this election year that every American presidential candidate promises to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and then after they're elected, they never do it. So there's something else going on here.
And I think maybe it's about time that they do it. You know, it's about time that there will be a brave American president that will come and say, we recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, we move our embassy there, and we're not using it as a political tool to force Israel to do anything, and we're not afraid from what the church will say, and we're not afraid from what the Arabs will say. We're doing what is right, and what is right is to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, as the capital of the Jewish people worldwide.
Thanks, Guy. We'll talk next week. When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 13th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in a new location. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn now. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up. Taste of Judaism is a tremendously successful education and outreach program and an exciting learning opportunity for anyone who is simply curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain an understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The classes include delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But you do need to pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with Jewish stories, crafts, and activities with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There is no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Bila Anderson at 520-327-4501 for more information and register today.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, over the summer, you spent some time at Camp Ramah, Wisconsin. We talked about that last week. The Ramah, the major camp of the conservative movement, and two groups. One, Israelis who have become different over the years, and another group. Well, explain sort of how they come to be at Camp Ramah.
Well, there's another group which is relatively new, certainly since my time as a camper in the late 60s and a staffer in the mid-70s. In those days, the kitchen staff, the maintenance staff, the people who did sort of manual labor, landscaping, whatever, were mostly local high school kids. And eventually, local high schools weren't producing enough kids anymore, so they went regional and took kids from within 120 miles and gave them accommodations like dormitory style. But it was still American, close to being local kids. Well, eventually that petered out as the baby boom finished and whatever, and those towns depopulated themselves. Camp Ramah is located in a little town, really a village called Conover, which is near a small town called Eagle River, which is an hour drive from the nearest airport, which is Rhinelander. And none of these places is very big. So what camp did to replace this labor pool was it turned to programs that hire legally young adults from Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. And there are many highly educated young adults in those countries with master's degrees or even PhDs already, or they're in PhD programs, who would love nothing more than to spend 90 days in the U.S. legally with a visa, of which, let's say, 60 days are spent working and getting free room and board and some money that they can then spend in their last 30 days traveling around by bus, staying in youth hostels, but actually seeing the country before they go back to Poland or Bulgaria or Ukraine or whatever. So the exact composition of this group has changed over the course of this program. It used to be more Central Europe, like people from the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, whatever. And it slowly moved east. And this summer, almost everybody was either from the Russian Federation, Ukraine, or Poland. And there were several things interesting to me. I had a session with them where they had a lot of questions, and it was mainly questions and answers, not really a lecture on my part. But one thing that was interesting was that here we are in the middle of the North Woods of Wisconsin, miles from any city, and these historic antagonisms among and between Russians, Ukrainians, and Poles are reenacted on a daily basis in the kitchen where they fight over resources and who's being lazy and who's bossing whom around. I mean, it's so predictable in some ways to anybody who knows the history of that region. But the other thing is, these are countries and cultures which are steeped in traditions of very deeply rooted anti-Semitism. And here are people who choose, maybe not even without knowing in advance, to work in an observant Jewish atmosphere where the Sabbath is observed, the dietary rules, even during the first 9 days of the month of Av, there's no meat served. So one would think that they would have a lot of questions. And in fact, they do, but there's not an organized program at camp to answer those questions. Like, there could be, you know, once a week a class in, like, why do we observe the dietary laws? Why do we observe the Sabbath? Basic Judaism, what you guys, I think, call a taste of Judaism,
yeah,
right?
That's right. Okay,
they're living it, but they're not getting a chance to interact intellectually about it. So one of my suggestions in the kind of after-action report to the director was that he implement such a program. It's also a golden opportunity to bring the Israelis we talked about last week and the Eastern Europeans and people from the former Soviet Union together for structured interaction and create a little bit of a pro-Israel lobby in some of these countries where, until now, most pro-Israel people are Jews who are doing their best to leave.
You know, it's fascinating because you mentioned a lot of these people came over, they have master's degree, PhDs, you know, they're coming over for the opportunity to be in the United States. These are not uneducated people, but their knowledge of Judaism, deeply rooted in some of the ancient antagonism, the anti-Semitism that's somehow in the soil and water of Eastern Europe and never seems to go away.
Right.
We will talk next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. After they moved from New York to Florida, Jake, who was 92, and Becky, who was 89, decided to shop for a pharmacy. "Do you sell hard medication?" Jake asked the pharmacist, who answered, "Of course we do." Jake continued, "How about medicine for circulation?" "All kinds," said the pharmacist. "Medicine for rheumatism and scoliosis?" The pharmacist said, "Definitely." Jake, "Medicine for memory problems, arthritis, jaundice, constipation?" Pharmacist says, "Yes, a large variety of the works." Jake said, "What about vitamins, sleeping pills, geritol, Parkinson's disease medicine?" "Absolutely," said the pharmacist. "And you sell wheelchairs and walkers?" The pharmacist said, "All speeds and sizes." "So, you think you'll give us your regular business?" "We'll see," said Jake. "But in the meantime, we'd like to use this store for our bridal registry." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature from Too Jewish, You Should Live and Be Well. And now a word of Torah, a question. What are the most important laws? Our weekly portion of Ki Teitzeh in Deuteronomy obligates us to ask this question, for it is filled with an array of laws and ordinances affecting every aspect of life. They range from rules limiting unorthodox ritual practices to rules limiting conduct in wartime, from personal morality to behavior in society. Family laws are established concerning marriage, inheritance, divorce. Tort laws on damages are instituted, providing moral and financial responsibility for property owners. Laws of kindness decree human decency in every area of life. Lots and lots of laws, some obscure, some famous. In short, reading Ki Teitzeh is interesting, but a bit dry. There's a reason law books never make the New York Times bestseller list. Additionally, some of the legislation is outdated, while other sections are irrelevant. But two sets of related laws established in Ki Teitzeh by themselves guarantee its place in the highest realms of morality. Both put into practical terms what the Torah has already stressed. When a person is in your power economically, you must not exploit his weakness. The first of these states that if you take as pledge an item of clothing from a poor person, you must return it to him before nightfall. In other words, you must not allow an impoverished man or woman to spend the night without proper clothing or shelter. This is a necessary reminder for our society, which tolerates homelessness in a manner that the much poorer world of the Torah's time would not. It is simply not Jewishly acceptable to tolerate such blatant disregard for human misery. The second law states unequivocally and memorably that you must pay a worker the day he completes his labor. In our society, delays of 2 weeks and more are common for payrolls, even for minimum wage employees who need the money most. Money is often withheld from workers who have earned it to pay for anticipated taxes, health care needs, and other deductions. This would never fly in the Torah or the Talmud, which at the least implies God's disapproval for such practices. Created at least 2,500 years ago, the Torah insists on a higher standard of morality for employers than we do today. Labor matters. It's part of the ethics of a real society, a society based on a covenant, a contract, an agreement between all of us to live well. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest, Jay Sanderson, CEO of the Jewish Federation of Los Angeles, will explain how the outdated and archaic Federation movement can change and become relevant in the 21st century.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 13th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in a new location. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn now. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up. Taste of Judaism is a tremendously successful education and outreach program and an exciting learning opportunity for anyone who is simply curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain an understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The classes include delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But you do need to pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with Jewish stories, crafts, and activities with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There is no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila Anderson at 520-327-4501 for more information and register today.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A lovely story. I mean, lovely in a funny way. Government-organized protesters held massive rallies in cities across Iran a week ago, marking Al-Quds Day, an anti-Israel event that uses the Palestinian name for Jerusalem. The event was observed by thousands of Iranians, during which they chanted "Death to America, Death to Israel" at organized protests throughout Persia. This political day of observance was established by the Ayatollah Khomeini of not-so-blessed memory after the 1979 Islamic Revolution. It was a means to unite Shia Islamic communities around the world against Israel. Speaking at a public event, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad called Israel a cancerous tumor and expressed his desire for a Middle East without the Jewish state, which he labeled an insult to all humanity. Ahmadinejad also referred to Israel as a Western tool to dominate the Middle East. "Today, Israel and the Zionist entity are against the preservation of all human rights and human dignity," Ahmadinejad said. Well, he would certainly know about being against human rights and human dignity, since he tramples all over it in Iran. Demonstrators waved Palestinian flags and held signs bearing slogans like "Down with the U.S. and "Death to Israel." Lovely. Iran's Fars news agency reports that millions of people, okay, probably not, but a lot anyway, took part in the event in over 550 cities throughout Iran. The demonstration was not only against Israel and the U.S., of course, but against the silence of the international community at the crimes committed in the occupied lands. No word from Iran on the Syrian civil war, in which Iran plays a principal part in supporting the murderous regime of Bashar al-Assad, which is busily slaughtering fellow Islamists in Syria. Ahmadinejad, himself a well-known cancerous tumor of a human being, is also a politician entirely devoid of a sense of irony or humor. This Iranian show of hatred for Israel in the guise of support for the Palestinians comes amid continuing tension between the West and the Islamic Republic regarding the Iranian nuclear program. Israel and the West have demanded that the Iranians halt development of their nuclear technology, threatening a military strike if demands are not met. Iran continues to respond by asserting that its nuclear program is for non-military purposes and decrying Israel's constant threats as psychological warfare. Strong international sanctions are in place now against Iran in an attempt to stop their atomic aims. In a continuing story from Germany, a rabbi in Bavaria has now been slapped with criminal charges of committing bodily harm for having done a bris. This is the first known case to arise from the anti-circumcision ruling in May in Cologne, Germany. The charge against Rabbi David Goldberg, who is a moyel, a ritual circumciser, means that the decision in the state of Hesse has now been applied in Bavaria, confirming fears of Jewish leaders in Germany that the local ruling would have a wider impact. Rabbi Goldberg is a Jerusalem native living in Hofsaal in Bavaria. The charge was confirmed in the main Jewish newspaper of Germany, the Jüdische Allgemeine Zeitung. The rabbi said he did not know what act the charges could refer to, since he had not performed any circumcisions recently in Germany, only abroad in Budapest and the Czech Republic and Italy, he said. Still, Rabbi Goldberg said no secular ruling will stop him from performing Brit Milah in the country. If a family in Germany comes to him with a request to perform a circumcision, Goldberg says he will ask the Central Council of Jews in Germany what to do, and a few weeks ago they told him, "You can continue." This particular suit, filed by a doctor in the state of Hesse who has gathered 600 signatures on an open letter to German Chancellor Angela Merkel supporting the anti-circumcision ruling, the German parliament and Merkel have said that they intend to push for legislation to ensure that Jews and Muslims have the right to carry out the religious ritual. The original ruling related to a Muslim family in Cologne whose son suffered complications after his circumcision. The court found that non-medical circumcision of a minor is a criminal act. Although the ruling was local, it has alarmed Jews and Muslims across Germany and really around the world. All Jewish denominations have joined condemning that ruling. This week, Israel's chief Ashkenazi rabbi, Yonah Metzger, was in Berlin for high-level meetings on this issue. Meanwhile, we received a tip. Anecdotal evidence shows that Jewish ritual circumcisions, Brit Milah, continue to be performed in Germany despite the ruling's chilling effect. Although several hospitals have declared moratoria on the practice for now, Brit Milah still is being performed in private homes and shuls, synagogues. The head of the Conference of European Rabbis, Moscow Chief Rabbi Pinchas Goldschmidt, said of this lawsuit, "The latest development in Hof, Germany, is yet another grave affront to religious freedom and underlines the urgent need for the German government to expedite the process of ensuring that the fundamental rights of minority communities are protected." And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Jay Sanderson. He's the president and CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater Los Angeles. He has been active in Jewish work for more than 25 years, particularly experienced in both what we call nowadays the new and old media. By the way, is radio the old media now?
You know what? I think old and new is kind of like left and right. You know, it's open to interpretation. I think that radio has certainly transformed itself by being able to be, you know, international just by being on the web. So I think it's somewhere between old and new, if you want to use those terms.
Okay, bridging the gap. Jay was the CEO and executive producer of the Jewish television network, JTN, where he created over 700 hours of award-winning TV programming. He substantially increased the, I guess, the reach and scope of Jewish television network, was seen in over 95 million households in the U.S. as well as really all over the world. Creator and executive producer of the PBS landmark series, The Jewish Americans, and the epic genocide documentary, Worse Than War. He has taken on the challenge of the LA Jewish Federation. You know, having grown up in Los Angeles in the synagogue world, I can tell you just briefly that the Federation's interaction with the synagogues often seemed to be accidental. Is it important in the second decade of the 21st century for federations to work more closely with synagogues? Is it irrelevant? How do you see it?
First of all, synagogues are challenged just like federations are challenged. And the model of a synagogue, and if you look at membership in synagogues nationwide, There's a huge decline in synagogue membership, and there's a decline in engagement once people are members. So the Federation's role is to be the center of the Jewish community, the hub, the convener, the leader in the Jewish community. It needs to have a relationship with synagogues, it needs to help synagogues, and it needs to engage the leadership of synagogues, and that's been one of the priorities of me in this job. The other part of it is, for me, is federations have been mainly secular organizations. Truth be told, federations really got a boon, in 1948 with the establishment of the State of Israel. They've been very focused on Israel, focused on issues of Tikkun Olam, and have not been, in essence, as Jewish as they should be. One of the first things I did when I took this job was I told everybody that worked for me that the fact is that we're the Jewish Federation. That means we have to prioritize Jewish need, Jewish issues, Jewish challenges. And in doing that, we have to work closely with the Jewish community. And in Los Angeles, as you know from living here, we actually need to work closely with the Orthodox community, which is not a normal way of federations functioning, and certainly wasn't the way this federation functioned.
You know, part of any large and particularly successful bureaucracy, and as you said, the Jewish Federation movement is very successful, particularly after the founding of the State of Israel. No kidding, it was a huge shot in the arm as Jews tried to find ways to help Israel every way they could. Now Israel is, although in need of support in various kinds, financially pretty darn strong. Sometimes it seems like it's stronger than the United States in its own way. What should the major focus of the Federation be right now?
Well, I mean, look, I can only speak to Los Angeles. Other communities have other challenges, but I think Israel will always be central to our mission. But my concern, as I said, in terms of taking this job, is the concern I think we have to have in Los Angeles, and I do believe we need to have nationally, which is we have to find new ways to engage more and more Jews in Jewish life. We have a diminishing community. It's been diminishing for a long time. The trend is not one that's changed. We haven't, we've been talking about, Jewish identity and Jewish peoplehood and renewal and all those things for decades. And yet, at the end of the day, more and more people are saying being Jewish is not a priority. Joining a synagogue is not a priority. Going to Israel is not a priority. And so if you really look at the forecast for the next 25 years of the Jewish community, if we do the same thing the same way, there's going to be a consistent Orthodox community and not much else 25 years from now. So to me, our goal in Los Angeles, and I think Federation's goal needs to be, how do you build and sustain Jewish community so that 25 years from now and 50 years from now, the Jewish community is as rich as it is today, maybe even richer.
So what do you see as the most interesting new projects that the LA Federation has been involved in since you have taken over?
Well, first of all, the most interesting project is really reimagining and transforming the Federation and the model, how we raise money, how we give money, and how we relate to the community, right? So I've been in this job for 2.5 years, and the biggest change is how we look at the world and how we relate to the world, both from a fundraising and from a, content program standpoint. That's the biggest thing. Now, when it comes to this particular audience, what we are, the biggest changes that we've been doing is, let's just take Birthright. You know, for most people, Birthright is the greatest invention in Jewish life in the last number of decades. So let's assume that's true. In Los Angeles, there are about 30,000 Birthright alums. It's a great program. For 10 days, these young people, many of them unaffiliated, most of them disconnected, get a huge injection of Israel and come back really passionate. The problem has been in Los Angeles and across the country.
No follow-up.
That when they come back, there's nothing afterwards.
No follow-up at all.
Right. So we actually don't call it Birthright anymore in Los Angeles. And we're one of the, you know, we're a major financial supporter of Birthright. We call it the Birthright Experience. And what we do now is we meet with these young people before they leave, which Birthright didn't want you to do beforehand, but we're doing it now. We meet with them before they leave. We staff the buses. So we have a staff member from the Federation on the bus. And immediately when they come back, we connect them to things that exist. We also connect them to things that don't exist. So we have a program called the Khan Fellows, where we identify, you know, on a, each bus, let's say one young person, and we say to that young person, we will pay you a stipend. In essence, you are going to staff the bus going forward, meaning you are going to create programming, and you're going to invite people that were on your bus and maybe people on other buses, and you're going to build community around the 40 young people that were on the bus. So we're engaging them in the existing community. We're creating new alternatives for them, and we're in relationship with them, because one of the things that happens in the Jewish community is we're usually not in relationship, and this is part of what we're doing. We're in relationship with them. In the meantime, we're looking at who's doing work with for 20- and 30-year-olds in Los Angeles, and we're funding those kind of initiatives, and we're recognizing we're going to have to create new paths, new initiatives to engage them as well. So it's a, you know, it's the beginning of, I think, what's going to be a community-wide initiative to engage as many young people as we can in Jewish life from the moment they graduate college to when they're starting to have their families.
You know, that has typically been the wasteland for Reform, Conservative, Reconstructionist, you name it, non-Orthodox Jews that go off to college. Maybe they're affiliated with the Hillel, which is a very small percentage, and they come back perhaps when they get married, or more likely when they've got kids and it occurs to them they might want to give them something. What's working out there?
Well, what's working out there are things that are a little edgier. There's a project in Silver Lake, which is one of the most interesting Jewish communities of young people in America, called East Side Jews.
A gentrification area, really.
But it's like young, hip, edgy people in the
artsy,
business.
Right,
all that. I mean, every kind of Jew you could imagine, every shade of Jewish is living in Silver Lake, young Jews. And so there's an organization called, a group called East Side Jews, a bunch of young people that get together and do tashlich by the LA River. They did a Havdalah service in a spice shop.
Did they have to bring their own water for the LA River, or?
No, there was enough water there. Don't make L.A. jokes. I'm not a native, but don't make L.A. jokes. There was enough water.
I am a native. I'm allowed to make those jokes, even though I don't live anymore. Okay, sorry, Jay. Go on.
By the way, I can tell you right now, no matter how much water we don't have in the L.A. River, I guarantee you we have much more water than you do where you're living right now.
Actually, it's pouring in Tucson, so I got you. Go ahead. What else are they doing with the East Side Jews?
So they're doing all kinds of edgy, innovative programming that attracts a ton of young Jews. They did this whole thing. They did a dinner. I'm not going to present it in a way that's going to sound attractive, but they went to a kosher butchery, mm-hmm. and they kind of basically followed their meal from the beginning. First they went to see the cows, where the cows were, then they saw the cows being butchered, and then they, you know, eventually ended up having a meat dinner. But they watched the whole process of what it means to kosher something. Now, by the way, most of these young people aren't even kosher, but they experienced it from the grass to the slaughterhouse to the, you know, to the rabbi to the kitchen to the plate.
Pretty cool. How many of them became vegetarians after that experience?
Yeah, I don't think any of them did.
What would you encourage other federations to do first that you've done as sort of a last ad here?
Well, look, I think we all have to look forward. We have been a community that has looked backwards and has been fixated on today. Doesn't mean we can't remember the past. Doesn't mean we can't be concerned about today. But if we don't look forward in decisions that we make, in the way that we do our work, in the way that we relate to the community, we're doomed to be, you know, we're doomed to fail. And we've got to look forward. And it's very hard in the Jewish community because there's so much to do today to look forward. But I'm forcing us to, even when we make a decision today about helping a person, to make sure that we're thinking about that person, you know, down the line as well.
Absolutely. I want to thank Jay Sanderson for a great and vigorous visit here on Too Jewish. You can find out more about the LA Federation on their website, which is one of the better Federation websites I've seen. Thanks for a great visit and an early Lishana Tova Matuka, a good and a sweet year.
You as well.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Lee Gordon of Hand in Hand, Israeli and Arab Schools in Israel, a fascinating story of Jewish-Arab cooperation and education in the Jewish state. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or on our TooJewishRadio.com website and like us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from our High Holy Day preview of music for the coming Days of Awe. It's from my dad, Rabbi and cantor Baruch Kohan, Ata V'chartanu. You chose us to observe and celebrate the many festivals with you, God. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Ato v'chartonu mikol ha'amim ha'avto osonu v'rotziso bonu.
Ato v'chartonu mikol ha'amim ha'avto osonu v'rotziso bonu. Ve'eram nantanu mikol ha'sholos ve'kitashtonu b'mitzvos sezar ve'keravtonu malkeinu malkeinu lavodos sezar
ve'shiva ha'gadol ha'gadol ha'kadosh olenu koroso koroso atol ve'chatanol Ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha